probably introduce myself. My name's Herb Holfer from Concordia Senior College. And I want to, first of all, I want to say right off that I am really glad to have this opportunity to speak to you people about this whole area of recruitment. And I was really glad to see that you people showed concern already in your discussion before the presentation, and I hope afterwards even more so. It really, because I really am convinced that this is something we ought to be concerned about, even now as students, and even more later on as we get out into full-time service of the Lord, as was brought out before. As you can see from the conference schedule, this next hour is to be devoted to this recruitment topic. Now, recruitment itself is a rather broad concept, and in fact has some rather negative connotations associated with it often. However, if you call it recruitment or persuasion or information or education or whatever you want to call it, it still is the same thing. It's this real and vital function of our church to get people out into the field to do their work. During the next hour, we will be considering student recruitment. That is both as subject and as object. Students recruiting students. Perhaps we can narrow it down a little bit more and say students recruiting students for church vocation. I have one other point which I want to insert right here at the beginning. I don't think our purpose in contacting these young people should be just this concept of recruitment. Our goal is much more a mass impression and education rather than just individual persuasion. Of course, both aspects are involved, and I will try to bring this out quite a bit later on. But I don't want you to have the preconception that this is just another form of high-pressure salesmanship. We don't persuade, we inform, and we discuss. Yes, we're concerned about the individual, but not to the aim of recruiting him, per se. Rather, that he, as a part of his age group, has sufficient information, background, and concern that he can decide prayerfully with the aid of the Holy Spirit what his specific calling in the Lord's kingdom really is. This brings us directly to our first consideration, the nature of the Christian's calling. I think it is rather significant that we kind of dichotomize this call and this calling into two different aspects. To me, it symbolizes this crucial misconception that teenagers, whom we often work with, so often have, what a Christian is to do with his next 40 or 50 years on this earth. Also, I think we can all remember that this was a crucial dilemma in our high school years. Just what are we going to do once we get out of here? At least in my own life and the lives of those teenagers to whom I've talked about this whole matter, the basic concern and motivation of every Christian to devote himself to God, as was brought out before, is really missing as the essential factor in this decision. This is just what Prof. Foyer was trying to bring out in his address. Now, I know that this may sound as if I'm stacking the deck by insisting that everybody should devote himself completely to Christ and to full-time service in the church, and then to come right back and say, now here are the five areas for full-time church service. But yet I think it is a valid statement, and I think it's a vital concern of our church that this is brought to the attention of the people. It must always be emphasized that a man or a woman often can serve his Lord just as well, if not better sometimes, as an engineer or a mother or a laborer or a secretary than they could probably as maybe a deaconess or a minister or a teacher. A person always has to adapt his own interests and his own abilities to the best service of his Lord. The Holy Spirit calls people in many different ways, to many different ways of service, and in many different manners for this specific service in the Lord's kingdom. Now, it is primarily at this point which I think that we as students have really got a vital function to perform in this whole area of recruitment. Now, I'm almost tempted to say that we're indispensable. How long ago was it that you faced this critical dilemma as to what you should do with your life? Was it 2 or 3 years ago that you decided, well, I should say 4 or 5 years ago maybe, that you decided perhaps church work is for me? Or maybe it was only 2 or 3 years ago when you thought, well, I'm not really sure, but it's starting to get to the point where I think this may be it. This type of church work that I'm training for might just be it. Or maybe is it like so many of us at the senior college, and myself included, sometimes you lie awake at night and you still say, is this really for me? But this is just it. This is where we can help these individuals who are trying to decide in their high school years as to what they should do with their lives. We who still can feel this, the power of this vital crisis in our lives, can speak to these people who like no one else really can. Who else can answer that ubiquitous question? Let's say for the YLTP worker, which is a youth leadership training program, or for any others for that matter. Somebody will say, this really sounds good, but is it for me? Anybody can give the academic requirements, the school facilities, the general costs, and even the general nature of the work itself. But who can better answer this question? How do I know for myself than the person who has just bridged this gap himself and can kind of characterize just what went through in his own life? Perhaps I can get at this point from a little different angle. In our presentation before the various youth groups of our church, we always emphasize and almost harp on this one point, that the call to the ministry or a social work or any of the others is essentially the same as to any other Christian vocation, any other vocation, well, maybe Christian as well. This claim honestly takes them by surprise, as I am sure it would have me when it did me too when it was brought to my attention when I was that age. Everybody knows that a pastor is called by God. Everybody knows that a deaconess has a special call when she goes out into the vast mission field, maybe in Liberia or something like this. And everybody knows that a teacher doesn't change jobs. A teacher is called. But who ever heard of a sales clerk or a secretary being called by God to his job? Yet the scriptural backing for this concept is irrefutable. I know it still sounds strange to my ears to say it. It probably sounds strange to yours too. But yet I think it's something which we have to really keep in mind. Well, how many of these Walter Leaguers sincerely believe that the call to full-time church vocation is really a matter of special divine revelation? It seems that the one example that really comes to their mind whenever they think of this call to the ministry or to teaching or social work, something like this, is perhaps the greatest minister this church has ever had, and that is St. Paul. It seems to me they always have this idea that everybody who's called to one of these church professions has his own special little light from heaven, and special voice of God spoken directly to him. And yet I think each of us knows from our own life It isn't this special divine revelation, all of a sudden, you know that this is it for me. It's something, just a little voice inside that says, just keep trying. You'll find out. Maybe this is it. Maybe it is. Maybe. Always the maybe. Doesn't every man or woman of God have his own kind of special flash? I used to think so, and I'm more and more convinced that we all felt this way. Until we decided on, or should I say, decided to give a try to, a church profession. Then and only then, when the working of the Holy Spirit hits right where it makes a difference, then we realize that this special call is full of all of the uncertainties and probably many more as are involved in any other choice of a vocation. It is this deep inner struggle which we can see and sympathize with in others, just a few years younger than ourselves. We can speak to their needs, and they are willing and eager to listen. We have everything going for us, age similarity in backgrounds of experience, the college man image, and the background and the knowledge of the vocation. I know we can do it, and I really feel we must. is probably a good time to mention one other aspect. That's that from our experiences at the senior college, the guys who go out in these, on this type of work really enjoy it. In fact, and as I was thinking about this, never occurred to me before, but there are only one or two that I can really think of, and these are juniors who have gone out on one of these recruitment things only once. It's always a matter of you get them to go out once and you know that they're going to be willing to go out some more. And it really is a wonderful experience to just get away from the studies for once and try to help somebody else besides just yourself. Maybe you only run across one or two at your particular presentation who come to you privately and they say, now, when you talk about this teaching, how does a person decide whether teaching's for them or something else? And then you can really talk to them from a personal experience. But at least you know that you have aroused another possibility, another series of possibilities for all these young people, and given them some living possibilities for consideration on how they can best serve their Lord. Now this brings me to another real sore point, I think, in the whole area of recruitment. I may be letting off a little bit of steam here, so I'll have to bear with me. Now maybe I've got this all wrong, too. But it seems to me that the more I work in this area about talking about the various church vocations, the more I am honestly appalled by the general ignorance of the audiences to which we speak, both young and adults. And believe it or not, I think that it's the general indifference on the part of the pastors in seeing that something gets done about it which is responsible for it. Now, I'll try to stay away from this latter aspect just because of the implications of it. But nevertheless, I feel it is a valid consideration for us, and at least from the experience I have had, I have found it rather significant. And I also think that it is something for us as future church workers that we should be concerned about now as well as once we are in the parish. For if there isn't some place where we as students can fit in this area of student recruitment, then we shouldn't be worrying about it at all. The only thing we can really do about it right now is to try to convince these ministers that we have a program which is worthwhile, and the church is trying to convince them that there is the need, and then to try to get them to permit us to come and to present our program and to speak to their youth or anybody else to let us talk to. I think we must be concerned about it now already if Christ's continuing ministry is to be effectively promoted. So often in the case of these searching young people, it is merely a matter of not really knowing the various opportunities available and not understanding just the true nature of the work and of the training which we're presenting. It boils down to a matter of not really knowing what a deaconess or a youth leader, social worker, and even a pastor or teacher really is. And what they do know about these professions often is stereotyped, misinformed, and generally mistaken. Our main concern in dealing with the groups as a whole is at just this level. We must attempt to paint as clear, detailed, and real a picture of each of these church professions as possible. You see, we lay the foundations in our discussions of the calling of every Christian, as we did just before, and then we follow it up by explaining that our purpose is to present five possibilities as to how this general calling can be carried out in full-time church service. Once again, our purpose is not to convince, but to explain. Ministers and ministerial trainees, deaconess and deaconess trainees all seem to be different from what I am. By being just as human and friendly as other people, we can show that there aren't two types of Christians, the devoted full-time service workers out on the front lines of the field, and then me. No, this isn't the point we want to get across, but that all of us are in the same relationship to God, and made out of the same flesh and blood material. I can't help but mention again that this is where students can prove the point as so much more ably. They can really have fun together with these young people. In both the serious and light moments, the conclusion may suddenly arise, geez, these people aren't so different from me. This is why we always like to have students preparing for each of the church vocations at as many of our presentations as possible. Then a guy who's fascinated by the youth work idea can really talk directly with a YLTP trainee. Likewise, a potential deaconess can talk to a real flesh and blood girl from Deaconess Hall on Velpo campus. I'm becoming more and more convinced that it is exactly at this level that our church is losing out. So many of the guys and girls I've talked to have complained that they just didn't know enough about these church possibilities to make a rational, intelligent, prayerful decision. The only church professions they really knew anything about at all about were the ministry and teaching vocations, and often these impressions were disconcerting and mistaken, as I mentioned before. I don't think it is too unjustifiable to point to the greatly increasing enrollment at Springfield, for example, or even the Lay Institute, to show that people are finding out later on, when they have the knowledge of these various opportunities, that maybe this is something for them. Well, I can hear it being said right now in my extrasensory hearing that I'm making some rather implicitly slanted attacks at Synod's present recruitment program. I don't think this is really true. We have a valid criticism and most important, a valid contribution to make to this whole recruitment idea. I've already mentioned the use of students as has been neglected in the past, but I also want to emphasize the idea of recruiting for all church vocations and not just for one individual school only. I was really happy to see that this was brought out in our discussion a couple of times. It's really, at least it convinces me that it's not just myself who's got this idea. I honestly feel that there is a real weakness in our present efforts, that we place too much concern on getting the individual to enter our school and not enough emphasis on motivating and educating him toward full-time church service, period. This is going to be a rather harsh statement, but I think I'll make it anyway. From my own meager experience, it seems that we don't approach these potential students as dedicated Christians looking for a place to serve, but as unconvinced customers who must be sold on the idea of our fine school. If you're from River Forest and a guy is thinking about youth leadership work and is sold on the Velpo campus, don't try to convince him that the RF program in campus is better, but encourage him along his present line of thought. I'm convinced that the Lord's ministry will be a lot better off. Yet I do not feel that these two philosophies of recruitment are necessarily antagonistic or mutually exclusive. I feel that a student movement behind all the church professions can be an important supplement to the present canonical program. If the church workers of tomorrow are concerned today about those who are faced with the problems they faced yesterday, our church will have many more workers tomorrow in its expanding field. I hope I have shown to you some of the possibilities available in this type of approach and why it can, has, and will work. All it needs is the enthusiasm and promotion of us students, combined with the support and guidance of those officers of Synod responsible. Something has to be done in this area of our Lord's ministry, and I think we as students can help do it. Yes, we must help, and we must fit in. Synod already has an extensive recruit program operating throughout synodical schools. And Dr. Al Schweed, the director of the Board for Higher Education, has graciously and consented to speak to us concerning this and concerning the whole church's need in this area. So that we can get a total perspective on this, then, I'd like to have Dr. Auschwitz speak to us now about the general need which is needed in our church today and which has been brought out so many times, also on the present program of the church, and just how we as students can fit in. Dr. Auschwitz.
Thank you, Herb. you're getting some materials coming out your way, that this is way I try to build my ego by passing out a syllabus for the course. I understand that no self-respecting prof attempts to stand before a class without a syllabus. In some cases, the deans are so unreasonable that they won't even recommend the salary checks being signed if the syllabuses are not gathered and aren't distributed. I wondered, Professor Hoyer, whether this boy down in that study room with all those girls at Pflugerville, whether he should have tried out for cheerleading. It'd be a spot for him there, wouldn't it? That isn't effeminate. I noticed that there's at least one male cheerleader in every outfit, so I think that's the solution. I noticed that there was a little bit of shying away from the word recruitment, and I go along with that. I don't know of a better one. We have been using the word enlistment. I can't defend that either. I suppose it's a matter of getting the information out and letting people decide whatever it might be. At any rate, we have the responsibility of calling attention to the people of not only the opportunities, but also the responsibilities. I think we need to face up the fact, too, that we don't volunteer for work. We don't choose it. The Lord probably chooses us, and at times I think that we probably resist rather heavily on a thing like this, too. But this is no criticism of anyone who tries it and then decides that probably some sort of full-time professional church work does not happen to be the thing for that individual. If by now you have received your syllabus, I'd like to have you look at the one on the biblical foundation of recruitment. I don't intend to go through all of this with you other than to call your attention quickly to the 7 points. Where we point out that among the essential gifts which the Lord distributes to the church are Christian ministers of the Word. I probably should tell you that when we talk about the ministers of the Word, I would intend that they should have a little bit broader implication than just the pastor, the preacher, whatever you want to call the individual, who probably is the head man supposedly in the congregation, but there are other ministries, and you can make it just as broad as you want to, as far as I am concerned. According to the riches of God's grace, there is great variety among these gifts, physically, mentally, socially, and spiritually. And these gifts are essential to the church, and since they are gifts of God rather than achievements of men, the Lord of the church desires we ask him for them according to the needs of the church. Sometimes we have not because we ask not to. In addition to praying for ministers of the church, the Lord calls us to participate in the work of preparing them for the ministry or the ministries. In the Bible, you have the emphasizing that ministers of the Word must be spiritually dominated and dedicated, physically energetic and vigorous, mentally healthy, emotionally well-balanced, and academically and socially competent. That's a pretty big order. We don't all come out that size. But I think it possibly we should come out with more than just 1 point favorable on a scale of that type. Then, since the ministry of the Word is a spiritual service, prospects must be motivated by spiritual inducements. Consecrated desire to dedicate their lives in the service of the Lord, cheerful willingness to walk according to the Lord's schedule in time and temporal rewards, and joyful anticipation of the promised blessings of the Lord. Then, since the church is charged to perpetuate its ministry,
Recruitment is one of the important tasks of all members, ministers, and congregations of the church until Christ comes again. Some of the other materials that follow on you may look at your leisure. If you look at the other sheet of paper that is placed into your hand, I would first of all indicate that, like so many other things, this particular syllabus is obsolete today. It's published. And this one is also needs a bit of correcting. I would like to have you put in parentheses back to the 1980 projected. We haven't been there yet, so I think you better put back there projected. And then if you want to do some more correcting, you spell projected the same way when you get down to the middle of the page where it says projected required annual total professional enrollment. We had the right number of letters, but it didn't come out the same way that they might have. I will attempt in a few minutes to give you some cause of concern why all of us need to really be interested in the professional leadership of the church, if you weren't already so. If you take a look at the membership in souls of 1940, 1,340, 1960, 2,470, now we go to the projected, 5,443. Now, I do not take any credit or any blame for the projections, and I don't have to worry about the others because those have been established. The number of congregations, I think, makes for interesting reading, where you have the number that you see before you in 1940. Going to 1960, this is the number that appeared in the official count in spite of the fact that 750 had disappeared someplace along the line, either by closing, by amalgamation, whatever happens to congregations when they're no longer around. Thank you. You almost helped me. The projected one calls for some 7,000. Now again, this is crystal ball gazing. However, it has been pretty well established by projections that have been made for a long time and have been corrected. These, I should say, come from the research department of the Senate and have much more reliability than they probably came from an individual board. So I think that possibly we can put quite a bit of confidence in them. If we have any particular comment to make about the projections have been made in recent years, and in past years, that they have not been extravagant. They have not been the stargazing type. If anything, they've been a bit conservative, and that's probably just as well. Now, the next one, if we're talking about pastors, again, this is the actual count in 1940 and the actual count in 1960 with a possible little note, footnote on the 1960, we could use about 10% more. And 1980, the projection of the research department, if we want to be in the kind of business that we think that the Lord has plans for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod or any successor to it should be in at that time. The next one, parish teachers and other church workers in the service. You notice the jump from 1940 to 1960, and I would say that 1980, in my own estimation, is plenty conservative. I think it's interesting to take a look at the students and the number of students enrolled at the colleges and seminaries. Not that they're the only source of church workers, professional church workers, but it does give us some sort of an index. The 2,500 plus in 1940 to 6,000
in 1960. This year, if you're interested, 6,820, I think is what the Lutheran witness said, with a projection for 1980. Now, if these projections scare some people, we would only remind them that this isn't any faster anticipated increase in the years that lie ahead than we have experienced in the past. I'd like to call your attention to the center set of figures where we have a comparison in enrollment figures with the projected enrollment figures which were made by the BHE back in document came out August
20, 1958. The only reason this is in here that it gives you some faith in projections, and another thing, if these projections have any particular value,
we find that we might be running behind. Back in 1958, these projections were made of the projected required annual total professional enrollment. Well, it appeared in 1959 and 60 that we were doing all right on the actual professional enrollment. And 1960 to 61, no. And 1961-62, it is not up to what was projected, and 62-63 also is not up to this. If you notice a difference between the enrollment figure in 1962-63 as with the figure that I gave you above, I do remind you that we do have some students at our colleges that are not declared professional students. Consequently, you have a difference. The estimated number of candidates required from seminary graduates by two-year periods, these are taken from the columns of the research department. So this is not any particular empire building, I would say, on the part of the Board for Higher Education, but simply points out the direction that we might be expected to go if we are, as a church body, are to provide preachers, in the full sense of the term, preachers for the positions in the congregations and the other related activities where they function. Now, you can read them for yourself, and of course that you have a decided step up when you get up to the year 1981. And the only comment that if this is the way that the church will take care of its professional needs in the future, that you can immediately see that we need to increase the actual number of people that are studying for the ministry as we understand it, as the pastor of a congregation or one of the pastors of a congregation or the other activities. You're aware of the fact that not all seminary graduates who are functioning in a full-time church work capacity are in a congregation. About 15% of the so-called pastors serve in other capacities. This can be campus or institutional chaplains. This can be synodical bureaucrats that work at 210 or teach at the seminaries or the colleges. Or they can be overseas missionaries. It can be a whole variety of people. But it would be expected that these people, of course, would come from the candidates also. Ordinarily, the people that graduate immediately from the seminary go a larger percentage than going to the parish. And then later on, when for some reason or another, the people probably feel they have reached more maturity, they go into some of the other positions. I don't think this is always true. You've heard the old particular saw on this. When they can't teach, they teach others how to teach, and when they can't teach others how to teach, they become administrators. So this happens to some other people too. I have a little bit of confidence in this projection of the number of candidates that we probably should be producing, because back on this August 20, 1958, the Board for Higher Education at that time projected that in the year 1982, the church should probably be expecting to graduate about 650 seminary graduates in that year. Upon returning from the Cleveland Convention, old Dr. M.G. Neal, who was heading up the research department, hailed me into his office, and he wanted to tell me that this number 650 was not correct. He had subjected the whole thing to a considerable amount of study, and after studying the thing very carefully, that he found it in error, and I told him to tell me more. He said, it's not correct, you only will need 643 that year. Later on, he corrected his figures, and he said it might be 645 or 647, which doesn't give you too big a margin of difference at all, so I believe that maybe we can have a certain amount of confidence in this. Now, the little footnote that it isn't only the pastors and the teachers, but certainly all of the other people that are involved in the professional arm, if you want to call it that, it's not a good term, but for a lack of a better one, we say the professional arm of parish workers, deaconesses, medical workers, social workers, youth workers, musicians, and a whole host of others. You always like to have some sort of an out on this, so the ones that you didn't remember to put in at that time will be needed. And of course, that the responsible boards will have to do whatever they can to encourage the church to make these provisions. It will not be sufficient, though, to have buildings and to have facilities and to have faculties and whatever you have in the way of physical arrangements or manpower on that level. But above all, we certainly will require a goodly number of students who are willing to subject themselves to the indicated training, education, whatever you do, to tailor them somewhat for the full-time responsibilities that they should shoulder later on. Recruiting or enlisting people for the various vocations Herb was talking about before is an ongoing type of a thing. It certainly is something that you don't expect immediate success. It takes time, and you have to be willing to make many tries in different places only to realize that a certain number will be attracted to this, will show that they have the definite qualification for it, and will persist on through into the work. I'm reminded a little bit of an incident when my good wife and I went canvassing, just to canvass, they helped canvass the neighborhood to find out how many people in the area didn't have some church affiliation. If I remember correctly, that we rang 72 doorbells on that afternoon. Some of them were at home, and a lot of them had church affiliations, especially over here in St. Luke's territory, Roman Catholic Church. But in spite of the fact that the tangible success wasn't very great, we always felt this was a very rewarding afternoon because of the large number of places where we stopped. We found one family. Persistent, isn't it? We found one family where the mother had been a church-going, Lutheran church-going individual some 6-8 years before, The oldest child was baptized, but there were four youngsters in the family that weren't baptized at all, and she was interested. Well, a certain amount of follow-up resulted in these youngsters being baptized. The mother and the youngsters have been regular in church attendance. Even the father has been showing some evidence of interest lately and may show up. He comes on Sunday morning occasionally. So I think it's one of these things where you keep trying, not expecting spectacular success, but always hoping and praying that there will be some turn of this. If I remember the schedule, Herb, this is about it. And if we want to leave some time for discussion, I suppose it's supposed to be on the three presentations, then we better cut it at this point, and I will be standing ready to try to answer any questions you may have on my materials. I understand that you have a display of some of the materials that are available. We don't believe that pamphlets and brochures sell nearly as well as people sell. You want to use the word sell. So we think this is going to have to be an individual missionary type of approach, but we think that sometimes that these others probably are launching platforms that can get the conversation into orbit, and then you can talk about the thing that you really want to. Thank you for the opportunity.